Welcome to the podcast series from the 9th EMN Educational Seminar on Migration 2023, entitled Protection of Migrants in Vulnerable Situations, organized by the European Migration Network in Slovakia. You're listening to the lecture entitled New and Protracted Crises, Vulnerabilities of Migrants and Refugees, presented by Federica Soda, the Director of the Department of Operations and Emergencies at the International Organization for Migration Headquarters. Federica has more than 20 years of experience in crisis preparedness and response, displacement, forced migration, and programming related to returns, disarmament, demobilization and reintegration, labor migration, counter-smuggling and counter-trafficking. He has extensive experience in working with governments, civil society, academia, and in complex, integrated UN missions. Enjoy the lecture.
Good morning. Thank you very much. I hope that you can hear me clearly. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm really delighted to be joining you this morning, even if virtually from Geneva. I am the director of the Department of Operations and Emergencies, and that's a position that I assumed just a couple of weeks ago. I left Libya in early June after about 3.5 year assignment there. And I've also been following the Central Mediterranean corridor for many years, since about 2014, in the course of my responsibilities with IOM. During my presentation, I will provide an overview of key trends that we see in relation to migration and displacement in particular. I'm going to highlight the implications for the affected populations with a focus on regional dynamics and protracted crises. I'm going to close with some recommendations to see if we can maybe work more closely together with all the relevant stakeholders, government, civil society, private sector, academia, to move forward on this, on these complex issues. So the topic of migration and displacement is really as old as migration itself. Certainly nothing new in terms of the dynamics and the themes. But it's safe to say that over the last several years, this issue has gained significant attention due to various socio-political and environmental factors. And indeed, the climate and climate migration are playing an increasing role in both the crisis we see and the type of mobility that we see. And this is a relatively new phenomenon. Understanding these trends is crucial to identifying the challenges and opportunities as we develop our response. So there's three particular points that I'd like to make here. The first is the scale and the multiplication of the drivers of movement. People are moving across borders and within countries in larger numbers than ever before. Conflict, political instability, economic disparities, and environmental changes are increasingly overlapping. So it's really, we're seeing a crisis with multiple elements that, multiple of these elements that are causing mobility and driving migration. And this is resulting in the movement of millions of people away from their homes. In fact, in 2022, we estimate that approximately 10.4 million people were affected by crises and moved as a result. And the top five countries with the highest proportions of crisis-affected migrants in 2022 are Ukraine, South Sudan, Venezuela, Lebanon, and Syria. So you see also that it touches on multiple regions, multiple continents. There are major mobility and displacement dynamics in Asia as well, perhaps not in the top five, but certainly in the top 10. And basically, no part of the world is unaffected. And a lot of these crises are also regional in nature, have regional elements. The Ukraine situation is one. The developing situation and very concerning situation in Sudan is another one. Venezuela, of course, has major regional implications as well. The global IDP crisis, internal displacement, is fueled by conflicts. And here again, we have some major hotspots, including again the Ukraine, Sudan that I've mentioned, Ethiopia, and large parts of the Horn of Africa, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. All of these have highlighted the need for greater international cooperation and effective responses. And this is the need for this type of cooperation is both due to the complexity of the types of crises that we're seeing and the duration of the crises. We have more crises emerging while an apparent inability or certainly a lot of difficulty in resolving and addressing the causes of these crises and putting an end to them. So that's, you know, critical aspect of it. But of course, these crises also have enormous costs, both for the people directly affected, but also for those of us, for the humanitarian system that tries to assist them. And the system is also stretched in terms of financial and economic resources. And I think this is also forcing a both greater collaboration, but also searches for innovative ways to finance and support these humanitarian needs. Let me share some figures according to the International Displacement Monitoring Center, the IDMC. The IDMC is a center that IOM collaborates with, that we share a lot of our data. We collect vast amounts of data on mobility and both international migration and internal movements. And the IDMC is a center that collects other data as well and puts it together. In 2022, the total number of internal displacements, according to the IDMC, related to conflict and disasters, reached a staggering 71.1 million people. This is a 20% increase over 2021 and the highest number ever recorded. And indeed, what's very concerning about the trend is that it seemingly tends to increase, not decrease. And that goes as well for the number of internally displaced people around the world. It's a number that's ballooning and basically only trending upwards. Because of this, the Secretary General announced a special action agenda on internal displacement to try and revisit, review how the humanitarian system and governments approach issues related to internal displacement, specifically looking at addressing the root causes, providing safe havens, and promoting durable solutions for displaced populations. These are all issues that are at the very, very top of the global humanitarian agenda. Secondly, the nature of migration and displacement has evolved significantly. Historically, many movements were motivated by economic opportunities, such as labor migration. While economic factors still play an important role, the fact is that today the impact of climate change, environmental degradation, and disasters on human mobility cannot be overstated. We will see increasing amounts of rural to urban migration, as a result of environmental changes. So movements from rural settings to cities. This will require also new approaches and new policies in these growing urban centers that will have to host and integrate in a way, even though they're often the same nationality, it's still a process of integration, I think, these people that will move as a result of climate and environmental degradation from areas where they may no longer be able to have a livelihood. Or perhaps the conditions are simply not suitable to live. Increasingly, people are being displaced from their homes due to slow and rapid onset events, such as droughts, earthquakes, extreme weather events. In 2022, weather-related hazards such as storms, floods, and droughts were responsible for 98% of the displacements worldwide. Again, according to IDMC, the total number of internal displacements due to disasters in 2022 reached 32.6 million, a significant increase from the 23.7 million in the previous year. So another indicator of both the impact of environmental and climate changes, but also another indicator of the increasing number of people being displaced. Climate and disaster-related displacement is a multidimensional problem with profound implications for livelihoods, societies, and economies that requires unwavering international attention and comprehensive humanitarian responses. And again, I would say this is, in general, one of the big themes of the humanitarian community right now, is looking at both climate changes and displacement, but more generally, the impact of climate and environmental changes on all of us, but on the most vulnerable and the most marginalized. Third, we cannot ignore the digital revolution and its impact on migration and displacement. In today's interconnected world, technology has facilitated communication and information exchange like never before. It plays a vital role in providing information, support, and connectivity to migrants and displaced persons. It helps them with their integration and access to essential services, including health and livelihoods. However, we cannot ignore the potential negative fallout of technology. We need to make more efforts to bridge the digital divide, to promote digital literacy and access, in particular for women and persons with disabilities. And we also need to do better at ensuring data protection and preventing trafficking and exploitation via online platforms. And it's certainly the case that technology is used very, very effectively by smugglers and traffickers to provide, to reach potential migrants and to provide basically these types of services, because they are services, it is transactional, both for the migrant and the smuggler, to move irregularly across borders. And this is it's very, very visible around Europe's external borders. And it's something that we were very aware of that was happening, indeed, in Libya, in terms of both reaching Libya and departing from Libya. So extremely dangerous and extremely extremely difficult to disrupt. Countering misinformation online is critical. This is also misinformation about migrants and foreigners in general. Misinformation can fuel fear, stigmatization, and hostility towards migrants and displaced persons. It can also contribute to misconception and biases, leading to the adoption of restrictive migration policies and hindering efforts to make policies and communities more inclusive and more open to integration. Technology should be harnessed responsibly to empower migrants and displaced persons and enhance their access to information, facilitate their integration, provide platforms for their voices to be heard. Collaboration between governments and technology companies and civil society organizations is crucial in developing safeguards and policies that mitigate the negative impacts of technology on mobility. And finally, migration policies and attitudes towards migrants and displaced persons have undergone significant changes. And while some countries have adopted more inclusive and protection-driven approaches, others have implemented stricter encampment approaches, immigration policies, and reinforced border controls. Balancing economic, social, and security concerns with humanitarian obligations remains a key challenge for policymakers and societies alike worldwide. And this is no longer an issue that divides the so-called global north from the global south. There really is no country that is unaffected by migration, and there really isn't a country that is struggling in some way or other to deal with these this phenomenon, and to deal with, in many cases, on one hand, a shortage, for example, of labor, as we've already heard, and on the other hand, the reluctance to welcome and people in and figure out how it is that they can make the most positive contributions to society. Without being exhaustive, I'm going to focus in on some regional dynamics and the situation of migrants and displaced persons in crisis. I was very happy to hear that the focus is going to be very much also on women and children. No group is more affected by humanitarian crisis than women and children. All of the risks that have already been mentioned are amplified in the context of these all of these crises. Now, as we will see, the humanitarian system on the whole is really overstretched. And the situation in large parts of the world in terms of regional crises is really both very complicated and very concerning. We have an unprecedented number of large-scale emergencies around the world. And this is measured through a mechanism that exists in the humanitarian community. It's called the Interagency Standing Committee. It was established by the General Assembly in 1991. IOM is a permanent member of this standing committee, and it is basically the highest level coordination mechanism for humanitarian coordination globally. And what this system does, one of the things it does, is it has effectively the authority to declare large system-wide scale-ups to respond to large-scale crises. And right now, the system the UN system and, well, the humanitarian system, because it's not just UN, it includes many INGOs as well, has five what we call level three emergencies. And level three is the highest level. And when a level three emergency is declared by the system, basically the agencies that make part, that are part of the system have an obligation and a responsibility to scale up their efforts in their response. So we have five of these right now. IOM, in addition, has two more. We have seven, as an organization, we have seven L3 emergencies right now. They are Ethiopia, Haiti, Turkey, and Syria in relation to the earthquake. Ukraine, which is a regional response. Afghanistan, which is a regional response as well. And the Horn of Africa, which is the result of many years of prolonged drought. And droughts both both in terms of absence of rain and then more recently as a result of floods. So this is the most level three emergencies that we have ever had. It's straining our capacities. And as I mentioned, forcing us to look for more efficient and more effective ways to respond. In 2022, I'll speak a little bit now about some of these crises more specifically. In 2022, the East Africa and the Horn of Africa experienced rising humanitarian needs and displacement. 9.6 million people were internally displaced, and 3.8 million left their country and to seek refuge and asylum. Ethiopia, Somalia, and South Sudan accounted for 94% of the IDP population in this region. And as I mentioned, it's a result of drought, acute food insecurity, seasonal floods, which have been an issue in the last few months in particular. And of course, in some parts of the region, conflict, political instability, and a protracted crisis related to conflict. So this is a very, very good example of where we have these overlapping contributors to humanitarian crisis, which become important drivers of mobility. Overall, the region accounted for 16% of the 274 million people requiring humanitarian assistance worldwide. So 16% of 274 million just in the Horn of Africa and East Africa region. Migration across the three migratory routes, that is Eastern, Northern, and Southern corridors from the Horn, increased significantly with 950,000 recorded movements against 744,000 during pre-COVID, so pre-pandemic. We're seeing in general over the last year not just a return to pre-pandemic levels of mobility, but numbers higher than before the pandemic. We obviously had a bit of a slowdown, even in difficult contexts. I know even in Libya, we had a sharp reduction in the number of people arriving in Libya from primarily from sub-Saharan Africa. But what we've observed over the last 12 to 18 months are sharp increases and numbers that are now exceeding the pre-pandemic level. And this is also what we're seeing in the Horn of Africa. We've seen the number of vulnerable migrants increasing, including women and children, and the vast majority for leaving they expressed was lack of livelihood opportunities, as well as localized violence in parts of the region. In the Middle East and North Africa, conflict and political instability remain the main drivers. In 2022, the Middle East and North Africa region had 12.8 million people displaced. This is always the IDMC data, particularly in countries such as Syria, Yemen, Iraq, Libya, and Sudan. We've seen a very, very sharp increase in Sudan as a result of the conflict there. More than 2 million new internally displaced persons since the breakout of the conflict earlier this year. And indeed, in this entire region, conflict displacement accounts for 99% of the displacement. However, the natural disasters are present. And of course, we have major issues with environmental change related to droughts and desertification, but also the earthquake in Turkey and Syria resulting in displacement earlier this year. In Yemen, the situation continues to be very serious, even though there has been a cessation of conflict for some months now. The humanitarian situation is critical. I was in Yemen at the end of April of this year, and not just saw the needs, not just of the Yemeni people in terms of enormous amount of work that needs to be done to restore basic services, enormous amount of work that needs to be done with respect to demining so that people can return home, that children can return to school. But also it is a very important migration corridor from the Horn of Africa to Saudi Arabia. And the numbers here are increasing significantly. In 2021, we recorded just about 28,000 people making their way along this route from the Horn of Africa across Yemen, trying to reach Saudi Arabia. And in 2022, that number jumped to over 73,000. So from 28 to 73 in 1 year. And when I was there in April and spoke to the migrants and the colleagues, the trends were that this year could be even higher than last. It is a very dangerous and quite violent corridor where people often get hurt and basically sustain serious injuries at the hands of smugglers and at the hands of people trying to prevent their movement. 70% of the population in Yemen is in need of humanitarian assistance, 23.5 million people. And there are approximately 4.5 million internally displaced. And as I mentioned, demining, well, the presence of so many mines is a very, very important reason as to why many people cannot return to their homes. The crisis in Syria continues to have a profound impact, with 15.3 million people requiring humanitarian assistance and over 2 million internally displaced, while a total, while the earthquake has only exacerbated the humanitarian needs. The Southern African region is also one where we continue to have both protracted crises as a result of conflict, but also major climate and environmental impacts. Millions of people are being affected by climate change and natural hazards, alongside with disease outbreaks and armed conflict and violence. So here, perhaps more than in some of the other regions, we have the additional concern of communicable diseases and outbreaks that coexist with already very fragile situations. The climate shocks in the region were extreme in 2022, with severe flooding, landslides in different countries, and a drought in Madagascar that left 2.2 million people food insecure. We also saw the multitude of health challenges, including outbreaks of cholera in Malawi, Mozambique, Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and wild polio in Malawi. The DRC has a situation that is that has deteriorated significantly in the eastern part, and was recently declared, about 2 weeks ago, was declared as one of these level three emergencies requiring system-wide scale-up. The southern route, the southern migration route connects to the Horn of Africa, which I've already spoken about. Again, this is another route with significant violence, abuse, and exploitation. There was a tragic incident of the discovery of Ethiopian Ethiopian migrants' bodies in Zambia, Malawi, and Mozambique, highlighting the dangers that migrants face when they move irregularly and through unsafe channels. Mozambique and DRC both have two complex protracted crises, with 5.6 million internally displaced in the DRC and over 1 million in Mozambique due to conflict. So you can see how quickly the scenarios become very, very complicated, and how significant these numbers are. I mean, I'm throwing around numbers of millions of people affected, like they're not that significant. It's very easy to get into the millions. But it is daunting to think of how big the scale of the problem is and how big the needs are, particularly in these protracted situations that have been going on for many, many years. We have populations that are repeatedly exposed to human rights violations, including attack, theft, looting, and of course, gender-based violence, with many being forced to move to seek safety. In Europe and Central Asia, of course, we have two migration dynamics shaping the regional landscape: the southern border for Europe, the Mediterranean, not just the central Mediterranean, but the whole of the Mediterranean, from Spain to Greece and even further east, and of course the conflict in the Ukraine. The war in Ukraine was certainly the most unprecedented crisis in the region. It has triggered the displacement of 5.9 million IDPs and nearly 8 million refugees since February 22, and severely impacted economies worldwide. This also, the impact on the economies is significant, because it has had important ripple effects, disrupting global supply chains, grains, fuel, fertilizers. And this in turn has aggravated food insecurity in other parts of the world. Of course, coinciding with the economic downturn of the COVID pandemic, the ripple effect of the Ukraine crisis has truly been global. Last but not least, the Asia-Pacific region faced a series of challenges that have triggered also mobility and migration. Afghanistan, of course, rapidly deteriorating human rights situation there, loss of livelihoods that have forced people to leave their home, and in neighboring Pakistan, natural hazards such as earthquakes, droughts, and floods. In Bangladesh, the Rohingya population continues to face ongoing movements. The situation has deteriorated in Bangladesh. Conflict and discrimination persist in Myanmar, making it impossible for people to return home. We have had catastrophic flooding in the Philippines, very severe flooding in northern Bangladesh in 2022, a cyclone earlier this year in Myanmar that has affected millions of people. And the list goes on with natural hazards in the Pacific, as well as in the Indian subcontinent. Now, I would like to just take a moment to just highlight some of the key challenges that migrants face. And first of all, protection is central to all of this. Protection risks and human rights violations. Migrants and displaced populations, again, especially women and children, but also the elderly, the disabled, are particularly vulnerable to the humanitarian shocks, and also to exploitation and other forms of abuse. The lack of access to basic services is critical in terms of both needing to be addressed, but also one of the main contributors to humanitarian crises. Displaced populations often struggle to meet basic needs such as food, clean water, shelter, and healthcare. They might find themselves in overcrowded or unsanitary conditions, which then leads to health issues and vulnerabilities to communicable diseases. Limited access to livelihood is big concern in terms of as a barrier for people to basically empower themselves and be able to make choices. It's also a major contributor to discrimination against displaced persons. And then finally, limited legal and social protection. And migrants and displaced populations often lack the social protection mechanisms, legal status, documentation, which might prevent them also from reporting abuses and basically increases their vulnerability to further violations. And these are further barriers for them to rebuild their lives. Addressing all of this is obviously very complex. Restrictive policies, negative public perception do not help us. The instrumentalization of migration in many political theaters for the purposes of votes or elections has become something that is both global to a large extent, but very, very concerning. IOM has developed a comprehensive multi-sectoral approach to the mobility dimension of crisis that stretches from the humanitarian to the transitional programming and then over into the peace and development area of work. Our approach is rights-based, it's needs-based, and it's people-centered. We're working with all concerned stakeholders, and we are prioritizing prevention and preparedness. So we do this by working closely with governments, communities, partners, and strengthening the capacity of local communities, authorities, humanitarian organizations to mitigate and to try to reduce the impact of a crisis and disasters. We also actively engage in capacity building work to enhance the abilities of authorities to respond, and of course policy to integrate human mobility and migration issues into solutions, into global frameworks, into national policies and legislation. We heard earlier about the importance of a evidence-based approach. I couldn't agree more. We rely very heavily on our own data as well as the data of others, but IOM's displacement tracking matrix, the DTM, provides important information for effective responses, not just IOM's responses, but the data that is produced by the DTM is used by the entire humanitarian system to inform humanitarian response plans and humanitarian needs overview. The data produced by DTM was used in more than 85% of the humanitarian response plans in 2022. Our aim is to respond swiftly. We have a substantial and direct operational presence worldwide. And we want to respond, but we want to also start as soon as possible to lay down the foundation for long-term solutions with protection of displaced people and affected communities at the forefront. To conclude, I would like to just make some recommendations in relation to the impact of climate change on mobility. States need to invest time and effort in integrating environmental migration considerations into national adaptation plans. Plans and policies related to climate. This is going to become more and more central to the issue of migration and mobility in general. No country is going to be untouched by this, and disaster response, migration, and sustainable development need to be looked at holistically in the formulation of plans and policy. The escalating global temperatures and limitations of adaptation measures are going to require us to look more proactively and more openly at enhancing migration pathways for safe, legal, and orderly migration so that we can prepare for the inevitable climate-induced displacements. We would like to invite policymakers to explore the recent legislative humanitarian visa measures that have emerged in Latin America, where governments there have taken a notable step by introducing measures to address the specific needs of climate displaced individuals and communities. They provide legal frameworks and pathways for those affected by climate migration. And Argentina, for example, has a specific visas for climate-induced migration. And we think that's, well, it's not only very interesting, but it's very, very forward-looking, and we welcome it. Prevention and preparedness needs to be at the key of humanitarian work. We need more work on anticipatory action and forecasting risk so that we can develop better risk reduction measures and work with the communities to strengthen their resilience so that they can better absorb some of the shocks. This means that we have to be more inclusive of migrants and mobile populations in the plans and in the durable solutions. And this is being done to some extent, but much more needs to be done, particularly at the policy level. And then finally, we need to work collectively, member states, governments, civil society, academia, on research, best practices, and lesson learned. It is key to the development of the implementation of policies that protect the rights and well-being of migrants and displaced persons. By working together, we can both find innovative solutions, strengthen the ability of communities to assume more control and have more say over how their communities are developing and evolved, but also look for alternatives to financing and alternative ways to continue to be able to support these humanitarian crises and to fill these humanitarian needs. Thank you very much.
This lecture was part of the 9th EMN Educational Seminar on Migration, entitled Protection of Migrants in Vulnerable Situations. The seminar is organized by the International Organization for Migration Slovakia as the coordinator of the Slovak EMN National Contact Point. This activity is funded by the European Union and co-funded by the Ministry of Interior of the Slovak Republic. Thank you for listening.